thanks organizers for inviting me here and give me the opportunity to speak here. So I would like to present work which is done in collaboration with Vladimir Bajanov, Carlo Meneghelli, Matthias Staudacher, Ruben Krasek, and recently also with Ying-Ying Xu. And it will be about the Q operators for integrable spin chain. So I'd like to show you how to construct Q operators for nearest neighbor spin chain. And this is based on three papers which are already published and the work in progress. My talk will be split in two parts. The first part was already presented in Budapest during the Johns Hopkins workshop, but the second part will be completely new and recent developments on this field. So I will start from the motivations. Our motivation originates from the idea of CFT correspondence, so we would like to say something about the spectral problem, and we know that the spectral problem, we have two sides of the spectral problem. Either we consider anomalous dimensions of the composite operators in the n equals 4 super young Mills or the energies of the string excitations. And we know that due to integrability, we can write the solution in a very nice way, which is called Y system or TBA equations. So we believe now that we know the solution, but still there are many questions. And the structure of this equation is very complicated, and the structure of functions which are there is very complicated. So what we would like to do, one of the main problem here is that, okay, we would like to know what are the analytic properties of the Y functions which are in this Y system. I will not tell exactly what is Y system because there will be several talks during these 2 weeks on it, but I, okay, so for me the statement is that just this Y system describes for us a solution of the problem. And the goal is to understand analytic properties of these Y functions. And here I like to quote Matthias, who last year he said that, okay, in integrable models it is very frequent that it's much easier to guess the solution than to prove and understand it. So what I would like to show you here is more understanding. So what these Y functions really are and how to deal with them. Okay, so, but of course, I mean, all the problem is very difficult to solve. These Y functions are very complicated. We would like to focus on something simpler and try to understand it first there. So what would be the simpler integrable models? So we would like to focus on the simpler integrable models, but we don't want to go too far from the idea of CFT. But due to Minahan and Zaremo, we know that the one-loop problem of finding the anomalous dimension can be mapped to the diagonalization of some integrable spin chain. So we would like to focus on this one loop problem only and try to understand more what we know about the spin chain. But also, okay, we can ask the more general question. So instead of only focusing on this PSU2,4, let's consider general GLN1 and 2/M, where comma means that we take non-compact representations and slash that this is a super algebra. And let's try to consider the integrable spin chain with this given representation in the quantum space. And how do we do this? So one of the best tool for this is to construct, we would like to construct the Baxter Q operators. And the reason for that is that it seems that this Y functions can be, okay, this Y functions can be expressed as functions of the eigenvalues of the Q operators. And it means that these Y functions are the composite objects, and the more basic objects are these Q operators or Q functions. So we will focus on these Q functions, Q operators. And in the literature for the rational case, which we consider here, there are at least two more approaches, which are this one by Derkaczansky and Manashov, where they first constructed Q operators for the non-compact representation of SL2 and recently also for compact representations. But this is only for SL2 case, for GL2, let's say. And also the other approach, which is by Kazakov, Laurent, Tsuboi, and Vieira, which uses the notion of the co-derivative. But so far, the results here are known only for the fundamental representation of an algebra, GLN/M. But only for the fundamental. So what I want to do, I would like to consider any representation in the quantum space. So this will include also this PSU2,2/4. Excuse me? Okay, so I'll make this comment later, but let's for a second assume that this is highest weight, okay? But I'll make a comment. Okay, so let me say what the problem is. The problem is we want to define the spin chain. So the spin chain is the tensor product of some Lth tensor product, n-fold tensor product of some space V, plus the periodic boundary condition. So we consider only closed periodic spin chains. And on the spin chain, we define a Hamiltonian, which is just an operator acting from this space into itself. And here, I only consider the nearest neighbor's Hamiltonian. So it means that the Hamiltonian can be decomposed, can be written as a sum of the Hamiltonian density, which acts only on two sides. So this really corresponds to the one-loop problem in ABS-CFT, so nearest neighbor's spin chain. And we would like to, take this Hamiltonian and just diagonalize it. So we can do this directly. This Hamiltonian is just the matrix in this dimension of V to the L to dimension of V to the L matrix, which means that we can just take and diagonalize it directly. But there's another way to do this, which is, okay, if you go to the very high L, it's very difficult to do this. But we can also diagonalize this Hamiltonian using so-called beta equations. And one of the most efficient methods to find this beta equations is quantum inverse scattering method, which I would like to present very shortly here. So what is quantum inverse scattering method? So we take our spin chain and probe it with the auxiliary particle. And this probing somehow defines for us object which is called transfer matrix. Here, this auxiliary particle scatters on the quantum particle with this R object, which I call R here. So what we do, we take a tensor product of these objects, then take a trace over auxiliary space, and this way we can construct transfer matrices. For different auxiliary particles, we have different transfer matrices. And this D here is only for convergence because we don't know if this trace is finite, if it exists or not, so to be sure that we put some convergent factor here. And it's easy to show that if we take the auxiliary particle the same as the quantum particles, then we can prove that we can, from this T constructed for if auxiliary particle is equal to quantum, we can find all the local conserved charges, like a shift operator or Hamiltonian, which is just the logarithmic derivative, evaluated at some point, which is called a permutation point. So this is like, this fact corresponds to the situation when we probe with spin-like particle. Okay, and we construct this transfer matrices, and it turns out that this transfer matrices commute with, among each other, and also they commute with Hamiltonian, which means that the problem of diagonalization Hamiltonian can be translated to the problem of diagonalization of the transfer matrix, and this transfer matrix can be diagonalized with use of the so-called algebraic beta ansatz. So what do we get? At the end, we get the beta equations, which are presented here for the fundamental representation only, but for any SLN. And so what does it tell us? This is some set of equations where if we say how many excitations of different types we have, number of excitations just defines a state for us. We can solve these equations, then plug the solution here, and we'll find energy for the given state. So it seems that, this is something which we called solution. Okay, but here I would like to make a comment that this method which I just presented, this algebraic beta ansatz, works best if we have a reference state, so the highest weight state, for example. But there are known examples where we don't have highest weight states. For example, there's a XYZ spin chain, which was solved by Baxter, and the way he solved it was not through algebraic beta ansatz, but he constructed some objects called Q operators. And these Q operators are just operators which eigenvalues are polynomials with roots being a beta root. So we just directly construct object which knows everything about beta roots. Yes, that's true. But you have to modify it a bit. Yeah? It's more sophisticated. Okay, this is not the standard algebraic beta ansatz. It's some. Okay, but. it looks like an algebraic potential, but it's not the one which I presented above. Yes. And but what most people in this field say is that these Baxter Q operators are the most powerful tool in the integrable models. So what? So we want to focus exactly on these Q operators and try to construct them for another spin chain. And only recently it was found by our group that it was only recently fully understood how this Q operator looks like for the simplest possible spin chain, which is a Heisenberg XXX 1/2 spin chain. So it seems that for this it should be known for a long time, but it turned out that it's not so obvious. And what we would like to do, we would like to just generalize this construction which we presented there for the general spin chain. And this construction goes with the method which I just presented, so it's inside of the quantum inverse scattering method framework. So, but before I go to the Q operators, I would like to show you how to construct these R matrices which are inside of the traces of the monodromy matrices. So we know that because we have integrable models, so the defining relation, the most basic relation which we have inside is Young-Baxter equation, which is saying that if we take three spaces here, then we can write a relation between R matrices, which describes the interaction between two such objects. So we can think about this as the particles. And Young-Baxter equation just tells us that we can scatter these three particles in two different ways, and we'll get exactly the same result. So, and this relation here, for people familiar with Youngians, this is just a defining relation for the Youngian. So if we find a solution of this equation, then we'll find a representation of Youngian. And if we take the simplest possible example, so let's take algebra, but the fundamental representation of it, so I mean GLN algebra, and three fundamental representations, then it's easy to find that the solution is just Z times identity plus permutation. Okay, but we don't want to stop here. We want to find other solutions. So let's fix two spaces there to be fundamental representations, and let's don't fix the third space. Let's say that this is W, which can be any space. And let's try to ask the question, what are all linear solutions to this equation? So this is Young-Baxter equation in three spaces presented here. And what turns out is that the solution to this, so the W here, can be any representation space of a tensor product of some GLP sub-algebra of GLN with the oscillator algebra representation. So which means that, we can take any spin-like particle here mixed with some oscillator-like particle, and we get the solution to this equation. And in the case where P is equal N, this is just exactly the same solution which we found before, so it will produce the transfer matrices. But if P is smaller than N, this is completely new solutions which we found for the in our previous papers. And now, so the particular case is when P equals N. But if you now take a singular representation in the GLP, we can construct objects which I will call QP, and which are constructed exactly in the same way as before. So we take this R matrices, this RP is just the R fundamental with this WP, and construct transfer matrices, and just by taking trace over monodromy matrix constructed from this R. And it turns out that this Q operator commutes with our transfer matrices, so they commute with Hamiltonian. Yes, please. If P equals to 1, if P equals to N, what do you mean that P equals 1? So,
yeah.
So, okay, so now P equals to N is the situation which was known for the long time, which produces transfer matrices. But if P is not, I mean, if P is less than N, then this is a completely new situation, not a completely new solution. And so these Q operators commute with transfer matrices, so they commute with Hamiltonian, and these are exactly objects which we are looking for. So if you just construct them. Yeah, so the fundamental is a quantum space, so we just have spin chain, the fundamental representation, and the auxiliary space is just this WP here. WP is an auxiliary space. So in the auxiliary space, we have this GLP representation and some oscillators. Yes. Yes. But this, so, okay, so Bajan-Lukens and Zamolchikov is only for SL2. Yes? Here is for SL1, yes. And this is for spin chain they have for the field theory, yes? Okay, so these are, if you just. So far it's only fundamental, yes? It will be. Okay, so these are exactly, if you just, it's easy to check that these are exactly objects which you are looking for. This object contains information about beta roots. And there's one more comment. There is even more this Q operators than, if you take a look here, it looks like there is N plus one of them, but there is even more because you have N over P different ways of fixing this subalgebra GLP inside of GLN, which means that in total there is 2 to the N different Q operators with different structure of the eigenvalues, so containing different roots. So we are talking about GLN fundamental representation spin chain. Yes. So Hilbert space is in the fundamental. Fundamental is finite. It's finite. Yes. Okay, so for Q operators, we just take a singlet in GLP. And because, okay, this auxiliary particle is this composite of the GLP and some oscillators. So you somehow get rid of this GLP just by taking singlet, and you have only oscillators. Yes. Okay, but we are studying here Youngian, so how it's the. It's. Okay, so in the quantum space, at each side, there is a fundamental representation of GLN. Nothing. No, in the quantum space, it's GLN always. In quantum space, it's always GLN. Yes, so I want to describe a spin chain in GLN fundamental representation. Yes. Yes. So this R acts in. So the R matrix lives in two spaces, yes? One space is this fundamental representation of SLN, and the other space is this GLP with oscillators. Yeah, okay, so the picture is here. Here. Yeah, you see here. So all of these lines are quantum spaces, and all of them are GLN fundamental representation. And this is auxiliary particle, which is this GLP tensor oscillators. Okay? And the R matrix is just an somewhat interaction between these two particles. So there's somehow no relation between these two objects. You take two spaces. Yes. Yes, because of that, we introduced this convergent factor here. Okay, so let me continue. Okay, so as I said, there's 2 to the n different Q operators. Okay, so now we want to move on, and we would like to find this R matrices also for which allows us to construct also the Q operators for the spintron of n representation in the quantum space. So one small comment. So we need one more ingredient here. So if we solve, this is a particular case of the previous Young-Baxter equation. So we take a fundamental representation here, and n representation, which we will not specify, but this is a representation of SLN, of GLN. So it's the same n as in the quantum space. And then the solution is written here a very nice way. So it's just z times identity plus that there's some tensor product involving a fundamental representation of SLN and generators of SLN here. Okay, so if you have all these ingredients, then the next step, so this was a quadratic equation to solve it. But the next step is to solve the Young-Baxter equation in 3 following spaces. So we take a fundamental representation, and a representation of GLN, and our WP space, which we defined before. So we know that this object, this R box with lambda, because we just derived it here, we know the box with WP, it was what was on the previous slide. So this equation is just a linear equation for the object which acts between any representation of SLN and this oscillator-like space. So we would like to find this R lambda WP. So here is the solution written. Okay, we can see this 3 terms here. So there are 2 exponents where inside we have generators of the SLN algebra. So these are it should be S here. I'm sorry. So this S and this S and this S are the same. So this should be, okay, these are generators of SLN, of GLN, and our oscillators here. And inside here we have some product of gamma functions where we have this this operators AK here, which I will just say what these AKs are. So this formula is expressed only in terms of the generators of the in the quantum space. So this is just a plug-in formula. We just specify our representation in the quantum space, plug it here. So all this S and AK can be expressed in this as a matrices in this representation space. And we can just find this R matrix from which we can produce Q operator. So these are oscillators in the auxiliary space. So this is only R matrix, yes? So yeah, this is summation notation here. So there are many. Okay, so I. Okay, so there are just many families of the Harmonic oscillators. As are the generators in the quantum space. So we define our, okay, so when we, I'm sorry, once again, here should be S. So solving for this object R box with lambda, we just found that this is a solution, and then it's expressed in terms of these generators in the quantum space, and they just propagate here, just giving us, so it gives us the R matrix in terms of this S. We don't specify a representation here, so we just write everything as in terms of generators only. Once again, capital A, I will just explain in a second, but this also can be expressed in terms of generators, but this is more complicated, but I will explain in a second. Okay, and this is the answer to the previous question from the beginning of the talk. So this works for sure for the compact and non-compact representations. So non-compact means there is also highest weight state, but because this is only algebraic expression here, we believe that it also works for non-highest weight representation, but we don't have any further checks for this. So the only problem which we can see is that, okay, if you take these R matrices and then compose Monroy matrix and then want to take trace, then the question is about if we can properly define this trace, and if the object which we'll construct will be exactly the operator we are looking for. So in the two first examples, it's correct. It gives us correct key operators. In the third, this is still a work in progress. So we conjecture that it's still true. Okay, so that was the question, what was a case? Yes? Hubbard model. So with our model, the problem is that the... Okay, yes, okay. So the answer is we thought about it, but we are not talking about it. So this is, Okay, so what are these AKs? So there are two equivalent ways of thinking about these AKs. So one way is just if we want to express them in terms of the generators of the quantum space, we have to construct the Casimirs. And here these Casimirs are of the subalgebra GLP. So this is somehow, we take GLN, which we have in the quantum space, take only GLP generators, and from these GLP generators, we construct Casimirs. And these A's are given by this kind of complicated formula. So our Casimirs can be expressed in terms of A's in the following way. But if you want to use the formula above, we have to invert this relation. So we have to express A in terms of C's, and these are kind of very complicated functions. So it's not... What's that? Oh, yeah, this is a power. Sorry. This is a power. So this is one way of thinking about this, but the equivalent way is that it turned out that this A's are nothing else than just shifted weights of the subalgebra, of the decomposition of this GLN representation with respect to the GLP subalgebra. So we have Q operator, if we have this R matrix, we fix the subalgebra, then we have our representation in the quantum space, and we take this representation, decompose it with respect to the GLP. So here is a simple example. So if we take GL3, and we want to take P equals 2, so we want to see how GL3 decomposes with respect to the GL2. So this is just octet decomposed in the following way. So these A's are shifted weights of these following representations here. So A1, for example, counts boxes here in the first row, and A2 counts boxes in the second row. From 0 to N, yes. Okay, so if you have... if you have SLN or GLN or supersymmetric case, then in this the Betty equations are nested Betty equations. So there are many levels of them. And roots of on every level corresponds to some key operator. So you have different key operators. Okay, so each of these key operators is labeled by some number, which is exactly this P. So for every level, you have another P. Okay, so different level corresponds to different roots, and different roots correspond to different key operators. No, I mean, if you construct Betty equations from the key operators, you just need all of them. Okay. No, you can. I mean, here in the construction, yes, of course. You can just construct Q with P equals 2, Q operator for P equals 2. But if you want the full information about the system, you have to construct all of them. Okay. So I'm not sure how, but yeah. Okay. So this was a general story, but now, okay, in the published papers, we shown already how the key operators looks like for the compact representations. So here is a simple example how they look like for the non-compact representations. So the simplest possible case is just so the spin minus 1/2, which is the simplest non-compact representation of SL2. And in this case, okay, we construct the basis of states, which are just infinite tower of states, which are created by some oscillators. And in this case, we just consider, for simplicity, we'll just consider L equals 1, because there is a very nice form of the Q operator in this case. For L equals 2, it's difficult to find like the one formula which describes all the Q operators. And in this case, the Q operator is diagonal, but what we can see, okay, there are, as I said, for GL2, there are two square different Q operators, and these are exactly these two square Q operators. So one of them is always trivial, at least we choose our normalization so that it's trivial. But then we have two Q operators, which are some non-trivial functions, which are functions of M. And we have also the one which corresponds to P equals 2, which is just a transfer matrix in the single representation, which is just 1 over Z here. And if you just take it and plug into Mathematica and fix some M larger or equal to 0, then we see that Q1 is a polynomial in Z for every M larger than 0. And Q2 is a very complicated function. So it's known, this fact was known before, that in the non-compact case, one of the Q operator is a polynomial, and the other is very complicated function. But here we have exact formulas for them. Yes? Yes, so a good question. So the phi, I said before that we have to regularize our trace, our monodromy matrix, so that we can take trace. So this is a regulator. Yes, discrete series. Yes. Okay. So to make some pictures, so to compare this non-compact representation with compact representation for people familiar with Hasse diagrams, so I put all these objects on the Hasse diagram. In the compact case, it's known that both Q1 and Q2 are polynomials. Q empty set is just 1, and Q12 is this function here. And we can compare it with the result which we just obtained. So for the spin minus 1/2, which is non-compact case, we have a situation which differs because we have one Q is non-polynomial, the other is polynomial. And, okay, and here, usually these two are known functions. And this situation which I present here, this will propagate to more complicated situations, more complicated cases, like if you want to solve ADS CFT one loop problem, we need to consider SU2, 2/4. In this case, we have 2 to the 8 different Q operators, and some of them will be of the polynomial form, some of them will be of non-polynomial form, and we know that this polynomial polynomials can be translated in the better equation, which was found by Niklas and Matthias. But okay, we can ask the question, what about this non-polynomial guys, what they produce? So we see that there's a kind of complicated structure here, also for one-loop problem. So one-loop problem is not so easy as it seems so. Okay, so now I've shown you just the solution of the problem. It's not 1 plus permutation, that's true. Yeah, but I don't understand the question then. Yes, so but this Q operator just generalizes to any representation. Okay, so once again, so this object here, so this object here, it has two representations, yes? So one is any representation, and we put this any representation to quantum space, and this will be... So this Z plus permutation just produces for us all these R matrices. But one loop. No, okay, sorry. Yeah, okay. No, I mean, okay, so Niklas, yes? Okay, so sorry for that. Okay. So... Sorry, asking. Okay, so I just was trying to explain you how the solution works. But the question is, okay, we know the solution, and we can find these very nice papers, which are called the nested beta ansatz for all closed spin chains by Belliard, Lagusse. And but the question is, what system we are diagonalizing? So what is the Hamiltonian for it? And if you look in the literature, it's at least to our knowledge, there is no known Hamiltonian for all representations and all superalgebras. So the next question would be, okay, so maybe we can also find it using the approach above or similar thing. So for example, we know that, okay, it's, the Hamiltonian is not known for every representation, every superalgebra. It's known for some specific cases. Like one of the examples is this GL2 case, where there's very nice formula in terms of the psi function, where this J is just okay, can be expressed in terms of Casimirs of the tensor product of the representations. And so the question is, if we can find some similar formula, so for the GLN case or supersymmetric case, it's not known in the literature. And also, I would like to remind you a very important thing. So the similar thing we have for all loop n equals 4, because, okay, we have our solution. But from the point of view of Nicholas Ford, so what we are diagonalizing really, for what is the problem which we just solved? For which case? It's okay, so R matrix is known, for example, for the rectangular representations. It's known. But it's written in terms of the projectors, which is very, very ugly formula. And if you go to very high representations, it's really, okay, you have to construct all projectors on the representation, under the composition of the tensor product of representations. So I would like to show you something which looks a bit more. How do you resolve what? Sorry? So I don't know what, okay, so but my comment is more that, okay, somehow it's not known what we are diagonalizing, yes? So I would like to just point it because, I don't know, maybe some people just forgot about this. And, okay, so, but let's go back from this N equals 4 back to our GLN case or GLN slash M case. So the way I presented before how to get Hamiltonian is you just take R matrix with the same representation as the quantum in auxiliary space and just take a logarithmic derivative of it. And due to Kulish, Rhetykin, and Sklianin, it's known that for GL2 case, there is this very famous formula which also can be lifted to PSU2,2/4 one loop problem. So, but if you take a look on this formula, from the beginning, it's not so obvious how to generalize this formula to energy LN. But then let's try to make some small trick here. So if you use the relation that the, okay, there are some relations between gamma functions. So what you can do, you can just use this relation and rewrite, okay, using some additional properties like the fact that if you multiply R matrix by any scalar fraction, it's also a solution of Young-Baxter, and so on. You can rewrite this R lambda lambda in the following way. And this J's here are, okay, if you take a look on them, they are just the shifted ways of the representation, of the decomposition of tensor product of representations. So if I write this now in the following way, and also I know that these J's are the shifted weights here, then, okay, but wait, we already saw today the very similar formula like this one. So if you go back to the general solution for the Q operator, then you remember there was exponents, so product of gamma functions, and some another exponent. But if you take GLN inside of GLN, that this exponent just drop out, it just vanishes, I mean, there's nothing there. And you only have the product of this gamma matrices. So, but this, so then this looks easier to generalize. So let us conjecture that the solution is the following. So instead of product of two such objects, let's take n such objects for GLN case. Okay? So we take the product of this gamma of z plus ak, where ak this time are shifted weights of the decomposition of tensor product of two copies of the representation. So it worked for the SL2 case. So let's conjecture that it also works for general case. But not so fast. What's that, please? I don't understand. Okay, so you have you take a representation, then test the product of these representations, two of them, and then decompose, yes, as a sum. So then the right-hand side is a finite sum, direct sum of representations. Okay, can be also infinite, yes, okay. No, Now, this formula here works. I mean, it says only that I have to take a product from 1 to n. There's no sum. So, no, then if I have infinite sum on the right-hand side, then this matrix will be just infinite. A are the C operators. So, yeah, so it acts. If I have this decomposition, so on each part it acts differently. So it's an operator on the tensor product of two representations. Yes? This is the point which, okay. So this is exactly the point which I want to stress here. So this conjecture is almost correct because it works only for the rectangular representations, which means no multiplicity. Okay? But still, for the non-rectangular representation, there is some information inside of this object. And this describes some part, which I called here symmetric part. I can explain for if somebody is interested. So only some part of this R matrix. But still, there is some information here. So exactly the situation of non-rectangular representations just correspond to the fact that in the decomposition, we have multiplicities. So for the multiplicities, this formula is not correct. But without multiplicities, our conjecture is that it's correct. And we are in the final stage of just proving it. Okay. Okay, and then, so in this case of the multiplicity free, then we can find the Hamiltonian density, which is just taking logarithmic derivative of this object, which means that the Hamiltonian will be Hamiltonian density will be just the sum of psi functions. And there is some normalization here, which we have to fix. Okay. So this is more or less all I wanted to say. So let me summarize. So we found a universal, at least we believe that this is universal. It works also for the continuous series representations method for the constructing of Baxter Q operator inside of this quantum inverse scattering method framework. Yes? And then it means also that we opened a new chapter of the theory of representation of Youngians because, as I said, every solution of Young-Baxter gives you a new representation of Youngian. And so in particular, this method can be applied for deeper understanding of the one-loop spin chain, which is present in the ADS-CFT correspondence. Okay, so what are our next steps? What we can think about how we can generalize this method? So the first question is, okay, so let's go away from the one-loop problem. Let's go to more loops, which means that we have to consider not nearest neighbor spin chains, but long-range spin chains. But then the problem starts. So there is this problem of wrapping, and it seems that there is a breakdown of this spin chain picture. So maybe there is a way to solve this problem. Maybe not. We still don't know. And okay, and finally, if we can overcome also this problem, then the final goal is to understand analytic properties of all Q functions, T functions, and Y functions which are present in the ADS CFT correspondence. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. So I imagine that you can guess your formula in the following way. In principle, you know beta equations. It's from the beginning, you can use them from these works. And also, you know expression for energy in terms of eigenvalues of beta roots and weights. Yes? In principle, you know this even before all the constructions.
Yes, as I said, there was many papers, but one of them was this Ragusa.
So then you just look where eigenvalues come, eigenvalue for representation consider come to the formula of energy. And then express.
But how do you know the formula of energy?
I suppose when you write beta equations, they also. I mean, okay, you can imagine what is the formula.
Yes, but this is. I mean,
it's like it's always some C functions and some over U. It's, and then even if you have eigenvalues in these formulas, you just know that eigenvalues can be replaced in terms of Casimirs, and then you put operators. Is this how you get this? In principle.
The question is how we got it. No.
Not like this?
Not like this, no.
No, I understand this is not guessing, but I mean, to show a final formula, you have to come to this formula. So,
we just solve Young-Baxter equation.
Okay, did you not do this kind of trick? Did you?
No, not at all.
No? Okay.
Just a small comment that at the moment there is no obvious relation between this one loop T functions and the Y system.
But you still can. Yeah, but okay. But okay, so one comment is maybe I'm wrong now, but there's a relation between Y.
It might ruin some of the motivation.
Okay, but.
May not.
Okay, let me say this. You are in the progress of writing down this finite number of equations, yes? There's no Y there, yes? There's only Q. So we don't care.
The one thing you can say is that whatever is the correct algebraic structure of the whole thing, when you take the one loop limit, it has to reduce to this algebraic structure. This is a full algebraic structure of all commuting operators for PSU 224 one loop spin chain. I mean, we haven't shown you this, but it can be constructed along these lines. And then whatever you do at all loops has to reduce to that.
Right, but this construction always leads to some local Hamiltonian, so it's probably not general enough.
We'll see.
Hubbard. Yes, but we don't comment on this. Yes, we fought, but we don't comment on this. Comment. That's
all. So can you summarize your strategy? Apparently, you are aiming at ADS CFT in operatorial. To try to make out of all the T functions, Y functions, operators. So what is your strategy? So step one, step two, step three. Now you know how to do it for non-compact, highest weight, as far as I understand, spin chain. Then what is the next? And
so as I said in the last slide, so then there's a question. Okay, so what about more loops, yes? So what about not nearest neighbors, spin chains?
Yes.
And, okay, we don't know what the answer is.
Okay, but there is... Okay, but there are some steps which seem to me crucial, and there are quite a few of them. For example, the dressing factor... You have to find, of course, there are some ways to guess it. Then Hubbard model, then wrapping. I mean, there are still many steps. Why would operators help here? But when you have wrappings, essentially it's like in the sigma model, you have already the finite the finite volume R matrix is not so helpful, yes? Probably mean asymptotic betans, let's say, for the moment.
There's Michael.
This is probably too demanding, but do you have any idea whether the beta ansatz is complete for these models?
For which model, you mean? Okay, sorry. Okay, so I think that there are some papers which says in general that the beta ansatz is complete, but okay, it was... It's not complete, okay, so... I mean, in general, I mean real and place. With
your question is related actually also to this regulator, because actually if you put this regulator, basically you find all the states. We are not doing beta ANDAZ actually. There is no beta ANDAZ here. It's just a complete algebraic solution, and since we are diagonalizing the matrices, we find all the eigenvalues. There is no beta ANDAZ here. I mean,
so the size of the matrix is exactly.
This is a way to completely algebraically solve any of these. This would be another talk, but I mean we didn't show you how to find the beta equations in this approach. But you're not making any beta ANDAZ here. It's just completely, I mean, basically from, you write functional equations. I mean, you derive functional equations for the properly constructed operators. And then from those functional equations, and you know, that's the first step, then you know the analytic structure of the eigenvalues because you know you have constructed the operators. And the diagonalization doesn't depend on the speckle parameters or the analytic properties of the eigenvalues are taken from the analytic properties of the operatorial construction. So then you have functional equation plus analytic structure, and then by plugging this analytic structure into the functional equation, you find the beta equation. There's no ANDAZ. That's where the first time these oscillators appeared, but it's not a systematic construction.
No, I agree, but just to understand what was asked, so they don't use any beta ANDAZ equation that is such a bright construction that can be operated, so they like the structure, and then somehow some of these data.
Yeah, it's a huge big generalization of that. That's cool.
This is that feature, so just to understand.
I think so, yeah.
In integrable models, when at least in the static problem, was interested in diagonalizing some Hamiltonian, and the beta ansatz gives the structure of the eigenstates. So, if as far as I can see, what you're finding is solutions to the Young-Baxter equations. But then the question is, what do you do with that? You're not interested in diagonalizing some Hamiltonian?
We are diagonalizing the complete set of all, every possible transfer matrix, including all the Baxter operators, they are just diagonalized in one go.
But then my question is, do the eigenstates form a basis for?
Eigenstates is another problem. You could ask how to find the eigenstates in this.
But diagonalizing an operator is finding its eigenstates.
This is a way to get the eigenvalues of everything. The states is another topic, really. Then you have to do more work. And probably you have to do a beta ANDAZ.
So you're finding the spectrum without specifying what the states are.
This is more like Baxter approach, yeah. If you wish. So is it the analytic beta ANDAZ somehow?
Well, it's part of it. I mean, the beta ANDAZ can. The problem isn't, I mean, for integrable systems, one isn't just interested in the spectrum, one wants to know what the eigenstates are. But you're saying that that's not part of what you're interested in. You just don't care about that.
I'm not saying I'm not interested, but. That gives a spectrum of the transfer matrices into the Baxter operators.
Okay, so if there are no more questions, let's thank Thomas again.
There is
one more question. Okay.
So what's the role of the non-polynomial Baxter operators? Obviously, they can't play a role in the beta equations because in this case, you need the polynomial ones. So what's the role in this whole picture?
Okay, so one comment would be that, okay, you can think about, this is a meromorphic function. You can find all roots of this, yes, and write it as an infinite product, and then try to make the same procedure, and what you end up with is just something which looks like beta equations, but on the right-hand side, the product is from 1 to infinity. So this is one way of thinking of this. But the point is that another key operator also contains all information about the system. So it's in the highest and lowest way, in the compact case, there is a very nice symmetry changing highest with lowest weight state, which just is mapping one to the other, this Q operators. Yes, but in this case, if you don't have a lowest weight state, it means that you map highest weight state to some infinity. Yes, so then this picture is a bit more complicated. But still, all the informations are inside of the Q operators.
Okay. So if there are no more questions, please let's thank Thomas again.